Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the largest, fastest growing, and most important segment of society. To those around the world who know that the political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions that claim to serve your citizens and countries are corrupt, that every one of them is counterproductive. There is no hope for fixing them. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate at any time over the next 3 hours in this discussion, is 877-376-45. As a program note, I am traveling from our California residence to our Virginia residence over the next 4 or 5 days, visiting one of my sons en route. I'm going to visit with the other once I reach Virginia. And so Larry and Scott are co-hosting this program on Thursday and Friday while I'm on my trip. And the likelihood is we'll have an archive for Monday's show. So that you know, I'll be broadcasting then from our East Coast farm for about a month. And then I'm going to return to California, to the Central Coast, for the month of December. That is the plan at this point.
This also affects your Shabbat show as well, correct?
That is correct. But okay. It doesn't cause the show not to go on. Larry and JB, who consistently co-host the Shabbat Torah study show on Blog Talk Radio, will continue to do so. So the Blog Talk Radio show will be very similar to what it normally is this Friday. And next Friday evening, I will be broadcasting it from the East Coast studio as usual. So that's the plan, I hope for safe travels and good family times. And this trip is actually my, for those that don't know, I'm only in the West Coast because we bought a house on the West Coast to support our youngest son's education. He ran into a brief period where he had some struggles, and we wanted to get him into a different environment, into a different school, and we did so. We traveled the country to find a school that was well suited for what he needed at the time. He flourished. We bought a home right next to that school to support him. He has now moved on 4 years since the 2 or 3 years that he spent there, and is working on his PhD in his last year of his PhD studies, and so there's no purpose in this home for us anymore, and so we are trying to sell it. We're also trying to sell our farm in Virginia because we'd like to end up buying a home closer to our eldest son and his wife in hopes that they have children and that we can enjoy the experience of being grandparents. So that's kind of our scenario. It is my wife and I 30th wedding anniversary this coming Monday. So my trip back east with Daug is scheduled to arrive late on the afternoon of our anniversary, so I can take my wife out to dinner. Some might think it's an odd choice of gifts, but beyond driving across the country to celebrate our 30th anniversary, my wife manages our farm on the East Coast. We have a number of employees, so one of us has to be there. And that's one of the reasons we're selling houses, is to stop this bi-coastal living scenario. Present for my wife was that she has remained exactly at the weight that she was when we were married 30 years ago. She can still put on her wedding gown and does to celebrate our anniversary each year. I, however, blossomed. I put on 40 pounds more than I weighed at our anniversary.
I'm going to have to remember that description for it. I am blossoming.
I have blossomed. Yes, I blossomed. I porked out and let myself go. I just spent too much time, you know, doing researching, writing, sitting here in this chair doing radio programs. And so I was 10 hours a day behind these computer screens or talking into this microphone. And didn't exercise and didn't work out. So about a little over 10 weeks ago, I tried to snap a pair of pants that had been my big boy pants and couldn't snap them comfortably. And so the option was either to change the way I looked or to buy another, you know, set of pants at a larger waist size. And I just decided at that time, no, this is going to change. And I began to restrict my my diet since that time. On no day have I consumed more than 1,200 calories. My maintenance calorie intake with no exercise should be 2,200 calories. So at no day have I consumed more than 1,200 calories. I've had as few as 600 calories in a day. I'm averaging less than 1,000 calories a day and have so every day now for 10 and a half weeks.
And this is something that people might not realize about you that I've gotten to witness for going on getting close to, what, 2 years now?
Mm-hmm.
You don't do anything like you don't just put a foot in the water when you decide to do something. You are very much so once you decide to do something, it's boom, we're going right now and we're going full force.
That is correct. It's not just that I've changed my calorie intake, because 1,000 calories a day is not very many, folks. I mean, that's when you really come to know what calories are in things, 1,000 calories a day is pretty lean. But I've also changed those 1,000 calories. So I'm only eating very lean protein. I will have non-fat milk. I'll have non-fat cottage cheese. I'll have non-fat yogurt. I'll have some non-fat white cheeses for protein. I'll have chicken, turkey, halibut, and salmon. Those are my meats. I'm not eating any red meat at this point. Almost no fat. I'll eat pecans and walnuts as a snack. I'm having lots of fruit and lots of vegetables. So consuming a fair amount of fruit and vegetables, but the diet is completely changed. Absolutely no bread with my meals. Absolutely no processed sugars or desserts. And absolutely no alcohol. And I was a guy that, you know, once a week I would enjoy a margarita with my Mexican food, and I had a glass of wine or a beer most nights with dinner. That's all gone. So that's pretty significant in terms of diet change. But the biggest change is that over that 10 weeks, on an average of between 6 and 7 days a week, I'm trying to average 6 days a week. I'm working out a minimum of 1 hour and as much as 3 to 3.5 hours a day, and hard workout, stair climbers, stationary recumbent bikes, and a Bowflex for my upper body. So I'm probably burning 1,500 calories a day with exercise and only consuming 1,500 calories a day. So I look a lot different. Long story short, is my present, my 30th anniversary present to my wife, is to physically be in better shape than and weigh the same that I did 30 years ago when we were married. It looks like I'm going to achieve that goal. I've now dropped 38 pounds and still have 5 days to go. So, I don't know if that story is of interest to anybody, but for those of you who, like me, are currently, or like I was, were a little bit of a little fluffy, a little plump, you can do it. It's amazing that once you just make up your mind and say, I'm going to do this, if you go online and you read, you know, what are the best foods to eat to lose weight? What are the foods to avoid to lose weight? Something will surprise you. And to do a little research, and then make sure you're well supplemented in vitamins, and that you eat balanced meals, low on fat, low on processed sugar, a minimum of 3 and hopefully 4 or 5 times a day, and consume, you know, around 1,000 calories, and do some exercise, the pounds will fall off. I've averaged a half a pound a day now for 10 and a half weeks, and it's every day. Some days are a little better, some days a little worse, but And then once you start it, the kind of things you begin to realize, and Scott, I know because you're an athlete, you've been through some of this, is that once you start a really rigorous diet and exercise program, you get into it. And, you know, I don't feel hungry. I almost never feel hungry. I don't feel sore from the exercise. I've kind of built up the exercise to the point where I feel great, enjoying the process, and knowing how much dedication is required to lose this much weight and to reshape the body from the gut to the chest and arms. There's just the motivation is very high to keep it off. So I would be surprised, even as we move into the eating season, and I'm going back where my wife has remarkable metabolism and eats 5 large meals a day and still at 5'7", only weighs about 108 pounds, that I'll be surprised if I don't continue to lose or at least maintain where I am. Now, turning to the news. This story bothers me a great deal. It is just so hypocritical. It's so disgusting. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry warned, lectured Russia that it will break international agreements if it recognizes a planned election by separatist rebels in Ukraine. I mean, you know, we for decades preached that we were that our entire foreign policy was based on ridding the world of military regimes, monarchies, and dictatorships. And that we were committed to allowing the people to choose their own government. We called it democracy. Well, that's not really democracy, but forget the word lesson in history. We claim that that's what we were devoted to. Let the people vote. Let the people choose their government. So in Kiev, the government that America is supplying with $25 billion and all sorts of military technology, they, with thuggery, overturned the popularly elected government. And in the East, they're trying to vote for a government of their choice, and we're calling them criminals. We move from pure hypocrisy on behalf of the United States to sheer stupidity. This story is out of Davenport, Iowa. It's not the hometown of, but I guess it's where he was traveling. House Speaker John Boehner is actually a resident of the suburbs just north of Cincinnati, Ohio. He has made a hobby of trashing Barack Hussein Obama. Trashing Obama is fair game. I mean, Obama is amongst the least qualified, amongst the least truthful, amongst the most counterproductive presidents America's ever had. I mean, we've had a lot of bad presidents, but he is among the worst. And so trashing Obama and his foreign policy, I've got no issue with that. But do so sanely. You've got so much material to use. And it's sad that Speaker Boehner almost never criticizes him on sane grounds. Well, now he is making a fool of himself on the foreign policy, on the campaign trail, by talking up someone Republicans have been running from, George W. Bush. And there's a reason that Republicans are running from George W. Bush. Even by comparison to Obama, Bush was a lousy president. I mean, Bush got us involved based on known lies in two terrible wars, the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan. In both wars, we lost thousands of American lives, killed hundreds of thousands of people, and squandered trillions of dollars. And in both cases, we made very bad situations much worse. In fact, our invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan is what has led to the Syrian war and to the breakup of Iraq and the civil war that's occurring there as well. So George W. Bush, on a 1 to 10 scale of good presidents, is a zero. But nonetheless, the idiot speaker is trying to say, yeah, well, in foreign policy, man, he would have been better than John Boehner. This is his quote. Does anyone think that Vladimir Putin would have gone into Crimea, if George W. Bush had been president of the United States? No! Boehner asked and then answered before a group of Republican volunteers. Even Putin is smart enough to know that Bush would have punched him in the nose in about 10 seconds, Boehner said to an applauding crowd. Now, I don't know what's worse, the idiocy of John Boehner or the absolute stupidity of the Republicans he was speaking to. Vladimir Putin didn't go into Crimea. He didn't launch a military coup. He didn't invade Crimea. Now, the United States has invaded Afghanistan. The United States has invaded Iraq. And the United States is invading the airspace and bombing Syria. I mean, those are invasions, military invasions. The United States invaded Vietnam. The Russians did not invade Crimea. The Crimeans voted 97% to disassociate from the thugs that took over the government in Kiev. That's it. 97% said, we don't want any part of these people anymore. We want to go back to being part of Russia. It's not an invasion. He didn't go into Crimea. Get your facts right. He hasn't invaded the Ukraine either. He would have every reason to defend the ethnic Russians who 20 years ago were Russian citizens from the American-sponsored aggression from the Kiev regime. He had every reason to do that, but there's no indication that he has. George Bush was an idiot. George Bush's famous line on Putin in his first term, he said, you know, I looked into his soul and saw that it was good. George Bush loved Putin. They were buds. George Bush would never stand up to Putin. Putin looked at George Bush as a jolly old nincompoop. Now, he looks at Obama as the plague of death. He thinks Obama is very, very dangerous. He thinks Obama is an absolute idiot, complete hypocrite, total and an utter ignoramus. He despises Obama. He rather liked Bush. Yes, according to United States House Speaker John Boehner, the class clown, George W. Bush, would have conducted foreign policy by punching the president of Russia in the nose. That's what he would have done. Yep, that's exactly what he would have done. He would have punched Putin in the nose. Now, mind you, Putin's in vastly better shape than George Bush. Mind you, that we can't find any evidence of George Bush ever punching anybody. I mean, he opted out of Vietnam, chose to go into the reserves based upon some inside help from Daddy, and then had a inglorious career. When he used the U.S. military, he used it very poorly. He invaded based on known lies, and he constantly lied while he was commander-in-chief. American foreign policy during the Bush era was about as bad as it could possibly be. The invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan destroyed America. There's no recovering from them. We unleashed hell's fury on the world. We created the mess we're witnessing now in Iraq with the Islamic State and Syria. It was amongst the greatest blunders in terms of cost of American lives and cost of civilians in foreign countries and cost of American prestige and in terms of just taxpayer expense in American history. So keep that in mind. Boehner is not only engaging in ridiculous hyperbole, he's also engaging in revisionist history. Putin did, in fact, invade another former member of the Soviet Union and key U.S. ally. During his administration, it was Republic of Georgia. And the case there was simply gas, the gas lines that ran through Georgia, and he wanted to have control of them. When the Georgian Republic began to push back and clamor to be more unified with Europe. Bush did not punch Putin or Prime Minister Medvedev in the nose. In fact, he was criticized at the time for not doing anything to discourage Russia. Sorry. And that was an actual invasion. That they didn't stay very long. They only stayed about a month. But that was an actual invasion. Russia rolled tanks. Crimea was not an invasion. And everything that Boehner said is stupid. It's ridiculous. It's ignorant. And yet he's the Speaker of the House. He's the highest-ranking Republican in the land. For those of you who are Republican, shame on you. As for Boehner, he reacted in a bipartisan way back then, releasing a joint statement with then-House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other leaders of both parties, condemning in the strongest possible terms the recent invasion of the sovereign state of Georgia. And that was it. What a nincompoop. Turning to the Democrats' class clown, the nincompoop on the other side of the aisle, we have this story that Scott sent me on the reaction to Hillary Rotten Clinton's ignorant statement that businesses and corporations don't create jobs, when in fact they create every viable job. There is no productive job in the country that isn't created by businesses and corporations. Government is a net killer of jobs. And a government job, most government jobs are ridiculous. You know, they're overpaid, underworked, overcompensated in terms of benefits, and perform at the expense of businesses and corporations. And typically in a manner that is counter to business and corporations, which puts a wet blanket on our economy.
Well, it's jobs like the DMV. Think about the DMV. It's something where you have to go there. You have to get a license. And even when you go there, you have to do it on their time. They're not open times where you can go there, you know, after work.
Right. Not interested in providing a service. And you'd swear after the experience that if you were to sum the general enthusiasm amongst the office for doing the job, you couldn't get, with an office of 50, to the same level of enthusiasm that one newbie, a brand new associate would have with a typical business. Well, and beyond that, if you were to combine the collective intelligence, the IQ, of those that you experience at the DMV or most government offices, you know, it takes quite a few individuals before you get to triple digits.
Well, let's just say if you go to the DMV upset, you're not going to leave happy. And if you go there happy, you might leave upset. They're very frustrating to deal with. And they act like they're they do the thing that I hate most about people that don't really care about their jobs. They act like what they're doing for me is such a hassle, you know.
But walk into a restaurant. It's a business. They're there to serve, to make you happy, to please you. Walk into your dry cleaners, a business. They're there to serve. They'll greet you with a smile. They'll call you by name. They'll thank you for your business. You know, they don't want you to have to stand in a line. They want to convenience you with their hours. They will do anything they can to convenience you. You know, walk into your local retail store. And the smaller the store, the closer you get to the individual owning the store, the better. But walk into your average store. You're greeted. People treat you nicely. If you've got a problem, they want to solve the problem. And then compare that to going to a government office. Oh, good grief. It's just abysmal. I mean, the people who work in the government hate their jobs. And at one time, you could go back and there was a period of time where a government worker was correctly paid about a third of what a private sector worker was paid. And the benefits were about a third of what the private sector benefits were. And that was appropriate because of the difference in the level of work performed and the devotion that's required to the job and the caliber of individual who sought that job. It was appropriate. Fair market. But over the years, particularly through unionization and liberal politics, pensions and benefits, health care and the like for government workers has so escalated that the average government worker now is paid between two and three times what the same job would pay in the private sector. And their benefit package for health care and retirement benefits is several times better than it is in the private sector. And so we have taken jobs that are suited for ignoramuses that have absolutely no incentive, no desire, and we're grossly overpaying them. It is absurd. That's why cities like Detroit have gone bankrupt. It is ridiculous what we have done as a nation. The only productive jobs in this country are business jobs, corporate jobs. That's it. There are no other jobs that produce a value. Yeah, and for those of you who would say, what about our military? That's government. Shut it down. We'd be vastly safer, vastly stronger as a country without it. And I'm happy to debate anybody who wants to take the other approach. So anyway, this article is on Hillary Rotten Clinton and her putting her foot in her ignorant mouth. And it reads, I suppose it's one advantage of lacking all seriousness and sincerity when you say something mind-blowingly stupid and you're catching heat for it and you just announce that you actually meant something else. So why not? All you really meant was, whatever will get you to vote for me, that's what I want you to hear. Now, the audience that Hillary Rotten Clinton spoke to when she said that businesses don't create jobs, and whoever tells you that is not telling you the truth, that businesses, they don't create jobs, she now says, oh, well, you know, I really meant to say something else. No, she didn't. It's exactly what she meant to say. So you're Hillary Clinton. Forgive me for putting that on you, but you're being laughed at everywhere for the idiotic statement that businesses and corporations don't create jobs. That, if you missed it, would be this statement. How do you deal with this? A few things happen. First, someone explains to you, much to your surprise, this is the Hillary quote, that businesses and corporations actually do create jobs, and you've just revealed yourself to be the economic ignoramus that those who chose you actually know you are. Oops, well, no problem, because you have no conviction, and when it comes to anything that proceeds from your mouth, it's no longer useful to me that I made that statement. Fine, I'm going to tell you I meant something else. On Monday, Clinton went out of her way to correct her comment for a rally for Patrick Maloney, the representative, the Democratic candidate who is up for his seat in the Hudson Valley District. Clinton said in her speech that corporations that outsource jobs or move profits overseas should not be granted tax breaks. Well, the fact is that the only reason that a corporation outsources jobs and moves profits overseas is what's different for both. They outsource jobs because government has made it far too expensive to hire American workers, because you've got to pay a 7% tax to the government for their Social Security on that pyramid scheme. You've got to contribute to their health care on another nationalized government scheme. You've got to pay unemployment benefits on another government scheme. And the rules on being able to fire an unproductive employee are so egregious that you always have dead weight on your staff. And then the government has imposed on you the cost of collecting taxes from all of your employees. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about this article on Hillary Rotten Clinton on businesses don't create jobs. For somebody to make a statement, she went on and on about it. That ignorant, that disjoined from reality, that ought to be just red flags for everyone, including the dopes that are huge fans because they like wealth redistribution, because they think that it is their entitlement to take what others create and allocate it to themselves.
Well,
whether it be student loans that they don't pay back, whether it be food stamps, whether it be housing assistance, whether it be the fact that they don't pay any income tax, whether it be their education, just whether it be their health care, just take it from somebody that's productive and give it to me because that's fair.
And the worst part is this is somebody that's never actually owned a business. She's never actually owned a business. She's a lawyer.
Never met a payroll.
But a lawyer isn't. A lawyer doesn't create.
She was
anything.
A lawyer.
But a lawyer
backwards Arkansas firm.
Lawyers don't
create. The only thing that made her famous is that her husband was a slick politician. And if it wasn't for the fact that her husband was a slick politician, she'd be in nothing.
But lawyers don't create anything. Lawyers are there to file paperwork and do everything. Because the second
when I was in business, one of the things we learned is that a lawyer can tell you all the ways something won't work, but can never tell you how to make something work. They're always there to tell you you can't do that, but they're never there to tell you what you can do.
Well,
they're a parasite on businesses. They're needed because the U.S. judicial system and its civil courts is so jaundiced, is so opposed to business and to common sense. Businesses have to have all manner of lawyers, tax lawyers and corporate lawyers for all manner of endeavors. And most of those endeavors have nothing to do with conducting the ordinary business. But, you know, America has made it almost impossible to hire Americans. We just talked about the reasons for that. But the reasons that corporations move their profits overseas is because the United States is way too egregious in taking money from corporations. That's why they transfer their profits overseas. They don't get a tax break for doing so. They're just moving their operation. They're moving their operation out of a country that makes it undesirable for them to have their headquarters there. I mean, it's really simple, folks. You want more businesses to relocate into America than as opposed to relocate out of America? Lower the corporate tax. You want businesses to hire more Americans and not move jobs overseas? Make it more desirable to hire American workers. But American workers have the same mindset now as do their politicians, as do the voters.
I was
what's yours is mine. What's mine is mine. What's yours is mine. They don't work. Their attitude stinks.
A lot of the worst times is that you'll notice that you'll ask somebody to actually do the job that they're getting paid for, and they'll get mad. They'll get upset with you.
You know, Scott, back when I started my first business, which was a sales and marketing business, and that business grew, and I hired, 15, 20 individuals. And what I found is that 80% of those that I hired, 8 out of 10, were honorable individuals. You didn't have to constantly look over your shoulder to see whether or not they were going to cheat you, whether or not they were failing to perform the job that you were paying them to do. They had a sense of morality, a sense of responsibility, a sense of commitment to the company and to the job.
Pride in your work.
The second job that business I created was an importer and manufacturer of retail residential lighting. We became the largest of our kind in the nation within 3 years. That built that company to over $100 million in revenue in a matter of 3 years. In that company, I would say that the number dropped to about 50%. About half of those that I hired could be trusted to do their job. And about half, given the opportunity to cheat and steal and to slack off and to take advantage of the business, would. And if they had an opportunity to go to a competitor, they'd do so. Well, the third business that I created was an internet retailing company that was valued at over $3 billion within 3 years of the time that I founded it. And that business was about 20% of the people I hired that I could trust. America had deteriorated. I think a lot of it has to do with our educational system and political correctness. There's no morality anymore.